This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you. Health and wellness on Joy Drive.
Now, it is claimed to have many health benefits, including potentially not making you fat and, instead of tasting terrible like anything that's meant to be good for you, it is generally considered to be absolutely delicious. Well, what are we talking about? We're talking about the Mediterranean diet. And Dr. Evangeline Mantzioris is an accredited practicing dietitian and the program director of nutrition and food sciences at the University of South Australia. Evangeline, good afternoon and welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
We're well, thanks. And it's great to have you back. So what is the Mediterranean diet?
Look, that's a good question. I think a lot of people, when they think about the Mediterranean diet, they probably think about things like gyros and souvlaki and, you know, lots of meat. But in fact, it's the complete opposite. It's the diet that was defined in Crete just after World War II in the 1950s and the 1960s. So it's what people ate at that time, and it's very different to what they would currently eat in that part of the world.
When, you know, that's a long time ago. So when were the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet first released? When did we start to hear about, you know, the benefits?
Yeah. Look, it was really early on. It was about that time. And there was a US physiologist, an academic, who went to Italy for a sabbatical. And this is where they take time off from uni to relax and think about research and work in a different environment. And he was in Italy and he noticed that the people there ate very little meat, ate lots and lots of fruit and vegetables and grains and cereals. And the other thing he noticed was they had a very low rate of heart disease, much lower than what he was accustomed to in the US. So that's where it all began. And from there, he did a study which we now refer to as the Seven Country Study. And he included Crete in it. He also included Italy, the US, Japan, Finland, Netherlands, and Yugoslavia was the other country. And what he did is it was an observational study. So they didn't change their diet. They just observed what happened to them. And they looked at the foods they ate, and they also looked at the rates of heart disease and cancer. And what they found was that the country with the lowest rates of heart disease and cancer was actually Crete. And so from there, the diet was defined at that time as the Mediterranean diet. And we've sort of hinted at what's in it. The main feature of it, if you could just classify it really quickly, is it's very high in plant foods, low in animal foods, and virtually the only source of fat in the diet is the extra virgin olive oil that they were consuming.
Wow. Has it, since this seven country study was done, Evangeline, has there been other studies done that back it up?
Absolutely. So as I said, it was an observational study. And the problem with that is we can't say there's a direct cause and effect. It just gives us hints about what's happening in science. And we normally back it up by doing experimental studies or intervention studies. And there's been two really big ones that have been done. And the first one was done in the 80s, and it was called the Leon Diet Heart Study. And what they did was they gave half the population the Mediterranean diet and the other half of the population had what was considered the gold standard at the time for reducing heart disease, and it was called the American Heart Association diet. And they gave it to people who'd already had one heart attack, because if you've already had one heart attack, your chances of getting a second one are even higher. And they followed this group of people over a period of 5 years. But what happens in clinical trials now is, and this is since the HIV trials in the 80s, was that if you have death as an endpoint to a study or a major health problem like a heart attack, ethically you need to look at your results halfway through to make sure you're not favouring one side over the other. And if they see there's a distinct difference between the two groups, the study has to be stopped and everyone has to get the same treatment. And this is what happened in this study.
Wow.
The study was stopped because the people in the Mediterranean diet actually had a much, much lower rate of heart attacks and death than the other group.
Wow.
And it was about 50% lower, so that's quite substantial.
Evangeline, as we're talking, you know, we are talking a little bit about the like working parts of the Mediterranean diet. It sounds like would a vegetarian or a vegan basically be doing a Mediterranean diet, like sort of without knowing?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good question, because a vegetarian diet is very similar to a Mediterranean diet, but the distinguishing thing is the use of the extra virgin olive oil.
Right.
And it's actually quite high amounts. And when I say the amount, people will be quite surprised. It's about 60 to 80 grams per day.
So what, 60 to 80 grams in terms of like how many, say,
tablespoonfuls?
Or, tablespoonfuls.
That's about 4 tablespoons or a quarter of a cup of oil.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? But, and we're being educated that, you know, to limit the amount of oil that we have, yet with this diet, we really need to increase it.
That's right. But the thing is that if you looked at someone's fat intake in their diet here in Australia, they would have about 60 to 80 grams per day. But it's because it comes from animal fat and margarines and spreads and cream and cakes and biscuits and all of that. But if you think of just eating beans and legumes, fruit, vegetables, lots of green leafy vegetables, and you're only having meat maybe once or twice a week, if that, and generally it was fish, there's not a lot of fat in those other products. So that's why most of it comes from the olive oil. And we know that extra virgin olive oil, as well as being a monounsaturated fat, which is generally considered healthy, it also has lots of other antioxidants in it and phenols, which have other protective effects of them. So it's hard to say it's just one bit of the diet. It's the whole diet together that has this effect. And we refer to it as that dietary pattern.
Evangeline, if you were short of time and you thought, oh, look, you know what, I haven't got time to go and research a whole diet and change everything. And you thought, you know, I'm a one pot person. I'm cooking something for the entire week. And you got a whole mix of vegetables and say cooked them up in a pan and just saturated it with olive oil and garlic and what have you. Would that sort of tick the box in some ways of doing the Mediterranean diet, as long as the rest of your food wasn't too bad?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the things I'm thinking of as you're saying that is, you know, stews or casseroles. With, you know, a can of white beans in it, you know, putting in a couple of different beans, white beans, kidney beans, lentils, you know, all the different veggies you've got. And one of the other aspects of the Mediterranean diet is the way that the onion is sautéed in tomato sauce with a bit of garlic as well. So you could have that as your base, and then you throw whatever veggies you've got in your fridge. You know, canned vegetables are fine, your canned beans or lentils or dried lentils, and adding it into the pot, and then adding herbs and spices to it as well. So you might want a bit of paprika in there, you know, give it a bit of chili. You might put oregano and parsley in it. So the more you put in there, the better. And then, you know, you could portion it in the freezer and have it with a nice piece of whole grain bread for, you know, dinner a few times a week.
We are all salivating.
Oh, we are, aren't we? Sounds good, doesn't it?
We're chatting to Dr. Evangeline Mantzioris, accredited practicing dietitian and program director of nutrition and food sciences at the University of South Australia, about the Mediterranean diet. Evangeline, we have kind of touched on one of the benefits, I think, which is, you know, in this heart disease study, but what are some of the other benefits of the Mediterranean diet?
Well, yeah, the research has just exploded in this area, looking at where else it may be beneficial. So it's useful in reducing diabetes, you know, reducing the glycosylated hemoglobin levels, and also reducing some of the other complications that's seen with it. It seems to provide benefits in weight control as well. And then we also see that it gives better cognitive outcomes and improved mental health. So it's really an all-round sort of benefits that are seen. And that's because the nutrients in the Mediterranean diet sort of target things like inflammation and reducing oxidative stress, which are implicated in a lot of those diseases. So it's really all around very beneficial.
Just on the nutrients, what are the nutrients that are in the Mediterranean diet?
Well, the first thing is it's a lot higher in fibre. Right. And fibre, as well as, you know, relieving constipation. It's also metabolised by the bacteria in your gut, and so it helps to grow a more healthy microbiome. And I'm sure everyone's heard about the microbiome now, and, you know, making sure you make it healthier and more diverse. And it's actually more powerful having more fibre in your diet than it is to take the supplements that have, you know, bacteria in them. Uh-huh. So fibre is one big thing. There's a lot of antioxidants in it, and because we've got all the different colours in there, every different colour represents a different phytonutrient and a different way that that phytonutrient acts in your body. It's higher in omega-3 fats, and that comes from using more fish in the diet. And it's also quite nutrient dense, and it's low, and this is the important thing. So as well as having all those good bits in it, it's got less of the bad things in it, like the saturated fat. There's virtually none in that. There's a lot less sugar. When they looked at the diets of the Mediterranean population in the 60s, they only consumed about 5 grams of sugar a day. A week. So that's really low, 5 grams a week, a teaspoon.
That's nothing.
Exactly. And it was probably used as a treat once a week. And also a lot less trans fat, which are the fats we find in processed commercial baked goods.
So, Evangeline, I know a lot of us will be going tonight and via the supermarket or our farmer's market on the weekend and getting a whole pile of veggies, cooking them up in a pan, frying the onion in the tomato, like you mentioned, and we get our olive oil out of the pantry. What if does olive oil go off? Like, if we've had a bottle there for, say, 12 months, should we throw that out and get a fresh one? What's the story with that?
Yeah, 12 months is probably borderline, I'd say. What you want to do is smell to see if it smells rancid. So it depends on the way that you've kept it. So if it's been, you know, often you see in houses when they display them open for inspection, they have the olive oil on the, you know, countertop. It's probably the worst place to put it because you don't want it to be oxidized by the light and to get any heat. So trying to keep it in a cool, dark place as much as you can. And then just smelling it. If it smells rancid, it probably is best to, you know, get rid of it. But I think going forward, when you say, well, look, you need 60 to 80 mils a day, a bottle shouldn't last you long now.
I can't wait to start drinking it.
Don't worry, some of my kids do that, so yes. Or dunking the bread in it.
Yum. Actually so delicious.
Yeah, with dukka. So, you know, there you get the mix of the spices.
Great idea.
Yeah.
I have to confess, I made a toasted cheese sandwich today, and I know the cheese is probably not good, but I didn't use butter, and once I took it out, I poured olive oil on both sides of it, and it just absorbed into the toast. It was so yummy.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So hopefully that counteracted the cheese.
No, the cheese is good. The cheese is a fermented food.
Okay.
So it gives you that healthy microbiome, and then it gives you calcium and protein. So it's all good.
I love you. I do love you, Evangeline. I love you because this is what you do. You give us all these facts and then you also raise us up. You know, it's like you do you, Warren. You eat that toasted sandwich and I'm so here for it. Before we let you go, Evangeline, is there anything else that we need to know about the Mediterranean diet, the Sabo?
Well, this is where my Greek's going to come out, right, guys? And this is where I go, you know, like in my big fat Greek wedding, the word diet actually comes from the Greek, right? So I've got to add this in here. And it actually means the way you choose to live your life, which is really contrasting to the way that we use the word diet in Western, you know, culture.
Because we use diet like it's got an end, don't we? As though it's got a beginning and an end. I'm going to do it for a month.
Yeah, and that it's really bad for you. But it also means about the other aspects of your lifestyle that you need to consider. So, you know, purposeful exercise. All of their exercise they got in the 60s was purposeful. So they dug their gardens, you know, they harvested, they prepped their food, they cooked it. And outdoor exercise, and there's research to show that outdoor exercise is better than gym exercise. And, Warren, you might have to change gyms now and find an outdoor one or something, because I know you're a gym goer.
I might.
So, you know, being in green and nature is also beneficial. And the other, and I'm sure anyone who's, you know, interacted, been at a Greek family meal knows how big meals can get with all the family that is together, and talk about the conviviality of meals. And this is important because it also counteracts loneliness, you know, and eating together is always better. And then, of course, the other aspect is sleeping. And we've seen a lot of this, you know, with health advice lately, you know, get exercise, go outdoors, sleep well, make sure you're not lonely. So, yeah, it's an all-round balanced sort of perspective.
Love it.
We do. We certainly do.
I can't wait to cook.
Dr. Evangeline, thank you so much for joining us as always on Joy Drive.
My pleasure. Have a good week.
You too. That's Dr. Evangeline Mansioris, accredited practicing dietitian and program director of nutrition and food sciences at the University of South Australia.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, tunein.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.